This is the Media Freak Podcast. It's the latest and greatest podcast created by media people who are just a little bit freaky. We're not the big dogs. We're the ones in the media trenches who tell you how it really is. Each episode, you'll hear from us with a quick roundup of media news, our expert guests, and some anonymous sources about the freaky world of media. So who's on the mic? It's me, your host, Harriet from Publicis, Jack from Craft.
Good to be back.
Bookie from Wavemaker.
What up?
And Charlie from Show Heroes.
Hello.
So as you would have heard, our old pal Jack has been a bit unwell this week. Some say he died of a hangover. Others said it was the half marathon that did him over. Either way, we're glad to have you in the room with us. So thank you, Jack. Thank you for being here.
It's just so great to be back and to be able to defend myself after the various degrees of slander last week. Is it slander or libel?
It's not slander or libel, yeah. If it's true.
Yeah, as I was saying, it's great to be back. Yeah.
Well, we're glad you're back. Today's episode, we discuss the multitude of antitrust lawsuits in tech, even more agency acquisitions, and question whether attending industry events are really actually worth it. In the tech giant world, Apple has reportedly been hit with a $162 million French antitrust fine over a privacy tool. That's right, the company has been accused of allegedly abusing its dominant position in mobile app advertising on its devices and having an unfair advantage. So the privacy feature is called ATT, which stands for App Tracking Transparency, and it requires iPhone and iPad apps to obtain user permission, before tracking activity across websites. So the French competition authority are suggesting that its implementation disproportionately affected third-party developers and advertising. In other words, apps owned by Apple were not subject to the same tracking restrictions. So I'm interested to hear what you guys think of this.
This isn't the first time that sort of our big tech friends have been under the microscope, so to speak. Though it's worth noting on this particular point of interest, they're also being looked at in Germany, Italy, Poland, and Romania.
Dang, I didn't know it was all of them.
I know the big boys are out. EU showdown.
Yeah, exactly that. But I mean, when we look at actually what this is, right? I mean, Apple marketed it as a bit of a win for privacy. You know, they're suggesting that people won't be able to track you. But then other bigger companies such as Meta were sort of saying that this is kneecapping our ability to deliver targeted ads, which is frankly quite rich coming from them. But I think that this is part of this new world where big tech are really starting to take a bit of a hammering from all sides from a regulatory position. And I think there's good reason behind that. They've been sort of this unfettered growth for best part of 2.5 decades, building sort of obscene amounts of wealth, but really kind of affecting, I guess, like in this Apple case, affecting smaller publishers and smaller players on the web and app developers. And it's something that I think is coming even more to the fore now with the rise of sort of AI and looking at how AI is sucking out data from publishers and without paying them effectively. Actually, one of my colleagues wrote a piece about this in Media Leader in the show notes. Yeah, and it's an interesting piece. Just talking about essentially that, how AI is not treating publishers in the right way, and I think Apple in this case is not treating the publishers and small developers in the right way, and I think in the same way that Google in the past has not treated publishers in the right way. So there's lots of angles that big tech is being hit on. I imagine we can speak about Meta in a minute, but this is just another way in which that's sort of coming to the fore.
So basically what we're saying is they've kind of loaded the deck against the little guys and just sort of helping their own apps grow and sort of putting a limiter on everyone else.
Imagine that. Who would have seen that coming? Yeah,
the shock and surprise that absolute power has corrupted absolutely.
Yeah. And have you seen it, like when you go on an app and it says, do you want this app to track you? Like, it's quite sharp language as well. Yeah. They've really not exactly tried to say, oh, well, it's helping the ecosystem. It's just like, do you want them to track you? And the average user, I imagine, is going to be like, well, probably not. No.
Okay. Yeah.
I think I'm the only person who selects yes, because I'm like, well, live by the sword, die by the sword, you know? And it also means...
I used to be that person. I was like, take it. I like the value exchange. Mate, but now I'm elderly now.
And I'm like, nah. The value exchange is all well and good, but I'm just like, if they're tracking me, they're just like, God, this guy is so boring. Why is he reading about advertising so much? Jesus.
The one thing that I always think, I'm like, right, do you know what? Track me all you want, but if I get kidnapped, you better find me.
Don't worry, guys. Apple have got a new... Actually, you don't want Apple tracking you in the real world with actual people. That's scary.
Find me if I get kidnapped.
Well, aside from finding Buki when she gets kidnapped, that's when, not if. Charlie, you touched on a really good point there about regulatory scrutiny in the EU. So could we see a fundamental overhaul in the way ad tech works on mobile platforms in light of this?
Yes, I think moreover than that, just the whole ecosystem as a whole. I mean, we've got to look at Google, who have been found guilty of exercising a search monopoly. That's done. They've done it. That's proven now in the eyes of the sort of FTC. And now that case has moved on to remedies, which is essentially the find out bit of the fuck around, find out continuum, whereby we now look at how much of Google is going to get dismantled. That is something that is, well, it's going to be dragged out, but it will happen. And similarly, Apple, although strangely in this Apple case, they've not really said what they want Apple to change. They're just fining them. And they're saying to Apple that you need to put up for 7 days, there needs to be a notice on your website. And there's not really much else. So interesting to see how that sort of develops.
I don't think things are going to change.
Le fine. I do not know why. You must pay.
Right. Well, moving on that note, in other antitrust lawsuit news, Meta is also in the deep end when it comes to antitrust, believe it or not. So that's Google, Apple, and now Meta.
Not Meta as well.
I know, it's Meta as well.
Oh, they do this to our best friends. I know. This is madness.
It is. And speaking of friends, old pal of the podcast, Mark Zucky, is in a bit of trouble on his home turf. So Meta is accused of allegedly monopolizing the market, having bought Instagram in 2012 and WhatsApp in 2014.
The old Zuck and Suck.
Yes.
Bucky's face. Sorry. I thought that's what it was called, the maneuver, when he bought everything, the Zuck and Suck. No?
Was it?
No. Well,
okay.
It is now, yeah.
I'm far too gay to know.
Well, anyway, the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission in the US, argues that the acquisition of Instagram was a way of stomping out the rising competitive threat to Facebook. And Mark Zucky and his jolly lawyers, I don't know why I decided they were jolly.
You make him sound like Robin Hood.
Yeah. Mark Zucky, his Zucky and his jolly lawyers.
Oh, my God. they're going to be after you for that.
Yeah. Well, they're confident they will win this case, saying that they are likely to argue that Instagram users have had a better experience since it was taken over. However, a 2008 email from Mark Zucky reads, quote, "It's better to buy than compete, which obviously won't paint them in a great light. So my questions to you are, if Meta is forced to give up Instagram, how might that reshape the paid social landscape? Would the fragmentation actually benefit advertisers, or is it likely to just make it messier?"
I think that's actually a really interesting prospect, because they do have quite distinct audiences, and Instagram is still smaller than Facebook in the UK. Facebook is where the kind of lion's share of the audience sits. But I think that fundamentally it would massively shake things up, obviously. I think if you look at paid social more widely, I think there is, given how powerful Meta are, they're basically getting way more than their fair share of budget out of clients at the moment. The profitability to research from like Thinkbox and Game Theory and GroupM and all those guys worked out that the average kind of saturation point is £31,000 a week for paid social. That's an average, obviously, across different categories it changes, but there are so many brands spending more than that every week on paid social, and I think that there might actually be a bit of a reassessment of how much people are pumping almost mindlessly into paid social if we see that split. I don't know, what do you guys think?
Well, that's a very good point, Jack, because I think that would suggest that we may rely too heavily on Meta's ecosystem.
Big time.
I think that actually breaking it up, and I'm trying to think about it now from a kind of planner's point of view, because right now, as a planner, I can go into Meta and I can plan across Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp. I'm sure you can plan something off WhatsApp. It's kind of dark social, but you can go in there, you do it all at once. So now you can start to see how it's become very easy for planners to just go, we're going to do Meta. We can get all the audiences. We can do all of that. You break that up now. Now, as a planner, as an activator, I now have to go into two different platforms. So when you're talking about us thinking about how we're doing and how much time we're spending on this, I think we are definitely going to see people either just choose one or the other. So if we're talking about reducing the reliance on these, on the likes of Meta, you might see the reduction in the budget just because of the time needed to actually activate is going to now suddenly double. So we're not going to do that.
I mean, the isn't that basically what a lot of digital planners are doing already when they're having to use loads of different SSPs for like when they're planning programmatic video campaigns, for example, they have to go through like all the different, you know, various.
Which is why they don't do it often.
Yeah.
Or they'll just go to the one that can get the most. So if you're going to break up Meta, you will actually will probably start to see whether Facebook or Instagram gets more budget. But I think on the whole, the budget will reduce just because we, you know, how many of the opcos are reducing staff and how many agencies are reducing staff. We don't have the time to be doing that across so many platforms. And then you roll in TikTok and then you roll in Snap. I'm not doing all of it across so many different platforms. So I think
it's going to disrupt their kind of the thing that they've been telling everyone for God knows how long, which is just 18 plus, let it rip, see what the algorithm does, put it across all of our platforms and we'll optimize it for you conveniently.
You've kind of answered the question there, Buki. You are saying in essence that advertisers do rely too heavily on Meta's ecosystem, rightly or wrongly. But so yeah, I guess you answered my question there, Books, but is platform consolidation stifling innovation in the media space, specifically the social media space?
I reckon so. I think it's just making it the same. That's just it. We're seeing it across all the different platforms where, you know, Instagram kind of comes out with who had stories first? I can't remember. Snapchat came out with stories first, and all of a sudden, and everyone's just doing the same thing. So I think it has been stifling innovation because, you know, there's this assumption that everything has to be scalable to everybody. Whereas actually, if we start breaking things down, we will allow the long tail to flourish. We will allow innovation that benefits certain groups to flourish in those spaces, as opposed to being like, if it doesn't apply to everyone, we can't do it.
Yeah, one of the interesting points actually that Zuckerberg and Meta will argue against their sort of impending potential doom is that Zuck said very specifically that there really are only a certain amount of I can't remember the phrasing he used, but a certain amount of tools that you can use in a social space, and part of his point was that actually we need to buy these companies get their ideas and incorporate them, because what we'll find is this kind of homeostasis eventually, whereby everyone's got the same ideas. There's only a certain amount of tools, he put it, that you can have. And that was part of the reasoning behind why he made these purchases. So he would argue that actually it wasn't necessarily the sort of just stomping out of the competition, but that there's a finite amount of stuff, we need to have it.
Didn't have him down as such a Zuck boy.
Yeah, honestly, I can't believe what I'm hearing out of your mouth right now.
I'm not defending him. I'm giving the balanced opinion.
I think it's a fair point. Surely that's just the attitude of someone who's like run out of ideas himself.
Exactly. That's how rich people stay rich. They say, yo, you can't have any more ideas. And if you do have any more ideas, they're mine.
Guys, I think we've had all the ideas. But I think this is it. I think we should just stay with Facebook now.
Well, speaking of rich people staying rich, are you happy for me to move on?
No, I had one other point that I wanted to make about stifling innovation, which is more related to media planning, because I actually think that when you've got it being sort of like a one port of call, where it's like, you know, you're being encouraged to go, yeah, 18 plus, let it rip across all of them, and we'll balance it for you. They're basically saying, you don't need media planning. You just need to trust what we're saying. And it leads you to, you know, what is the kind of wider kind of malaise, I suppose, within the industry, is like where you have the cookie cutter plans, the same thing every time. So maybe by breaking up one of the giants, you'll find more interesting and innovative and therefore effective media plans.
Yeah, just as a side point on that, obviously Meta have got loads of different lines of business, right? And WhatsApp and Instagram and bits and bobs. But all of them are really just a nice shiny thing that drives the ad machine, right? Meta is an advertising company that happens to do tech stuff. Do you know what percentage of their revenue comes from ad dollars?
Oh, I love a quiz. 82%. I'm going to say something like, what did you say, Jack?
82.
I reckon it's like 77.
It's 97.5.
Oh my god.
97.5.
I guess she was about to say 97.
Why was I allowed to go? Because I would have got.
What were you
going to
guess, Harriet? Sorry.
I was going to say higher than Jack, so I would have won, but anyway.
Actually, nice and broad. Nice and broad, yeah.
Can you guys. Okay, I've got another quiz because Harriet didn't get to answer that one. Can anyone tell me what the short term profit ROI of the average social media campaign is?
Short-term profit ROI.
Just go on, say a number. It's between 1 and 2 pounds. That's your guideline.
One point one.
Just 1 to 1. Is that what you're saying? You get put £1 in, you get £1 back.
£1 ten. You get £1 ten back.
Right. Okay.
1.4.
I think one.
You think evens? It's £1.62. There you go.
Wow.
I mean, and if you compare that to audio, for example, it's £2.47. So, you know, I always bang on about audio, and
that's why you want to listen to this podcast.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, we'll preach.
Data,
we'll preach.
Data.
In network agency news, so there's been another acquisition in network agency world, and this time it isn't Publicis Group.
Oh my goodness!
Another surprise.
It is a surprise. So WPP has recently acquired InfoSum, and that's a major investment in its AI data-driven agenda. So DigiDay says the acquisition is an up for WPP in the data-driven arms race, which I really liked. And Global Chief Data Officer at WPP told the industry press that the acquisition is consistent with what we're seeing in terms of demand from client and also for our strategy in data and technology. So that's the blurb, the industry press blurb. So how does WPP's acquisition of InfoSum position it relative to its competitors like Publicis with the likes of Epsilon?
Well, I think it needed to happen. I think we needed to kind of compete on this space. Like you said, Publicis has been buying everything and anything and everything. And whilst... obviously, you know, WPP, the kind of USP that we've always had is the kind of proprietary media and the preferential rates and all that kind of thing. But if you can't join up the audience in the way that Publicis have been doing, then, you know, it doesn't really mean anything. So I think it was absolutely necessary for them to make a purchase such as this.
I mean, it just talks to like that wider crazy thing that I guess as you sent it through earlier, I was sort of reading through it and thinking, God, that you forget that agencies aren't really in the world, like they don't work in like the world of people, do they? Because we're the people who work for them, we're like, yeah, they're all about people, but they're really not. This is all a big move towards the eventual reduction of headcount, and you know, some people will kind of still work at agencies using this stuff, but as they grow this AI offering that they are basically training on data through things like InfoSum and Lotame, and all of the media plans that we produce, they have probably got one eye on how they're going to reduce that headcount in the long term, and it's a little bit unsettling for me.
Just on the headcount thing, I think in the campaign article that we kind of read some of this out of, it did say that WPP headcount was like 114 or something at the end of 2023, reduced to like 114,000, reduced to like 104,000 or something. Don't fact check me on that, but it was that kind of 8,000 reduction already. So I think what you're saying, we'll probably see a lot more of that as we go on.
Yeah, I mean, the other flip side of it is that it frees up people to do other stuff as well. I mean, there's no denying that there'll be trimming, let's say, but if it can free up your time to do more effective things, then great. But just make sure that you are the person that's going to be chosen.
I think, a last thing from me on that is, I think that, yeah, Jack, what you're saying, I definitely think is kind of how things are going to be going. But what they need to watch out for, what we all as planners, buyers, all of it, we need to watch out for, is that this doesn't happen in isolation. Because the way that culture is coming for people right now, it doesn't matter how trained up your AI is and how many kind of back-end data things. The one thing about human nature is that we are completely irrational and completely unpredictable. And you can look at the amount of data that we got out here and predict what should happen, and the complete opposite will happen. So whilst we are hedging our bets in this space, there will always be a place for people. And I think that in terms of like leadership, should also just keep an eye on what's going on and who you're allowing to stay in, because you will lose your best talent, and people will lose their best talent in this when people just say, fuck this, I'm not doing it anymore because I can't be bothered. I can see what you're doing because I'm smart and I'm out. But then you'll end up with the people who couldn't see what was going on, and those will be the people in charge of your AI. So just be careful, I think, because culture is coming up and it can't be predicted.
Do you know what? I can't believe I'm going to say this. I agree with Books. Because one of the things that I was thinking about is like, and a lot of the articles about this acquisition are like, oh my God, is AI coming for planning and strategy now and stuff like that? And it's like, yeah, there are things within the planning and strategy disciplines that you can get it to do. But the thing that it can't do yet, I suppose, and I'm sure it will be able to in the future at some point, but perhaps not to the extent that we can, is it can't synthesize true human understanding. And that's because like insights are things that you notice between two data points. It's like your perception of the tension and your understanding of that. And it's something you've noticed. I don't think AI can properly notice things yet. It just takes loads of stuff that's gone before or loads of data points and goes, here's what it says. But it will always mean 1 + 1 = 2. They will never get that kind of 1 + 1 = 3 effect that you can when you stumble across something really, really strong. So
yeah, I agree with you. The cultural point. It's sort of a Rory Sutherland-esque point that you raised there, Bookie, which is like the kind of, it's the illogical that is the kind of one that happens, and that's where the magic is, to use a sort of phrase of his.
And I think, as you've mentioned, Rory Sutherland, I think, when you look at the traditional media agency business, which is your paid media, you know, all that kind of stuff, that's where AI can really do its business. But when you look at the importance that owned and earned is now playing, it's now actually entering the realm of paid, because we are, instead of having a paid campaign, we're going to influencers, or we are creating a content series, which technically isn't paid media because it's owned. I don't think I don't believe that AI will be able to kind of pattern those types of things and pull together the cultural insights and create, you know, a content series in the way that people can. So, yeah, I think just the ecosystem change up is going to really be tough for AI to traverse.
Do you remember that one podcast we did ages ago about the AI influencers?
I mean, it
was like last year or something, but obviously that never really became that much of a thing. But unless
people are still working on it, man, it's happening.
I was going to say,
for the influencers, but I did not speak out, etc.
Look, I think we went down a really kind of pessimistic viewpoint on the acquisition of InfoSum. It basically went to AI is taking our jobs.
I said it could take some people's jobs.
Okay,
it's gonna help us create lots of value for shareholders.
Oh yes.
And lots of joined up campaigns.
There we go. That's a nice way to look at it.
Absolutely. I mean, InfoSum also is pretty good. Like, I've worked with InfoSum before, and like that, I like the way that they have a sort of a clean room approach that's decentralized, rather than just sort of bringing all the data together in one point. Actually, for people who, let's face it, we're all having our data mined by these big companies, and InfoSum, by having a decentralized model, are probably keeping your data much safer than putting it all in one place. And it actually means that you can have better collaboration across different media owners and clients. So I'll put my ad hat back on. There are loads of benefits to it. So yep. Well done, yep. InfoSum.
We do
WPP
concur.
Are back in the game. They're back in the game.
Oh, well, anyway. We never left the game, Harriet. What's that about?
Well, if you listened to last week's episode,
I did leave the game last week.
Well, moving on. In the MarTech landscape, we've previously shared news of our partnership with Alchemy Network, an innovation consultancy that's changing the game when it comes to marketing and ad tech. Think of them as your shortcut to the cutting edge. Alchemy works with over 550 global brands and agencies, distilling the overwhelming world of emerging tech into tailored, time-saving sessions that cut through the noise. They're a really good partner if you've got a brief to crack, or if you just want to stay sharp on what's next in our industry. So, Jack, I know you rave about Alchemy, don't you?
I do, yeah, because basically, as you've probably gathered from some of my comments this episode, I'm not the most like tech forward media planner, I suppose. I'm quite traditionalist, but there are
elderly.
I'm not elderly.
Elderly. He's an elderly comms planner.
You need to have some respect. Thank you very much. No, but joking aside, like, I think they do a really good job of bringing things that are relevant to you. And also, frankly, if you're a media owner, they do a pretty good job of getting you in front of people that you might not otherwise be able to pester on LinkedIn into having a meeting with you. So it kind of works both ways. If you're an agency person who wants to simplify things, that's great. And if you want an easier ride as a ad tech partner or a media owner, then it kind of works as well. So it's win-win.
Well, if you're curious and you'd like to learn more about Alchemy Network, reach out to hello@alchemy-network.co.uk to find out more. Why are you laughing, Jack?
I'm laughing because Bookie's changed her title on the podcast recording software to Harasser of Jack. Oh, such a professional operation.
Sorry, Harriet. I just needed it to be clear what I was up to today.
That's fine. But I will repeat the email address for those that missed out. Reach out to hello@alchemy-network.co.uk to find out more. So that wraps up our news this week. Remember, you can respond and have your say in any of the topics and stories we discuss on the podcast. Email us at info.tmfpod@gmail.com. That's info.tmfpod@gmail.com.
Or go on our Instagram or TikTok, because we also check those. And yeah.
We check those more than the email, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, probably
honest.
More than...
I have never checked the email.
Across the emails, don't worry.
Okay, thank goodness.
God, one of us is. Of course it's Charlie.
So moving on to Hero of the Month. So if you tuned into the pod last week, you would have heard that the wonderful news of one very lucky girl won Hero of the Month.
Woo!
But never fear, you also have the opportunity to nominate your industry Hero of the Month and give them the spotlight they deserve, plus a bottle of champs or a top tier non-alcoholic alternative. You can even submit yourself. I've made up that rule.
You can't submit yourself. That's
you
one of the rules.
You can't do that. What the fuck? Is that why there's loads of Harriet this year, this week?
Oh my God. I did. I wondered.
I wondered why it was literally Harriet, Harriet, Harriet.
I thought she was just beloved in publicist, but it turns out she's been nominating herself.
It wasn't me. I may have asked a few people, but anyway. Okay. The form is featured in our show notes if you would like to submit somebody, not me. Or you can reach out to us on Instagram. And moving on to our Media Anon this week. So, Buki, forgive me, for I have sinned. What is on Media Anon this week?
I love that that's your intro. But, okay, this week on Media Anon, we have open quote marks. Attended Adweek for the first time last week and left feeling underwhelmed. Long queues aside, many of the sessions I attended felt vague and lacking substance. I was genuinely surprised by some of the speakers, particularly given the seniority and experience they bring. Is this really the standard of excellence we're putting forward as an industry? If this is what our flagship events are delivering, are we missing the mark on what these gatherings should be for the industry?
Blimey.
This is a very interesting one, because to be honest, I wanted to speak on this for a minute. So I'm very happy that this has come in, because it is into that kind of event season. I myself am speaking at an event coming up on the 29th, the future of audio and entertainment.
So the standard is really dropping then.
The standard, I'm about to raise the standard. Don't worry about that.
They let anyone speak.
That's not nice. But no, a very interesting take. I want to hear what you guys think before I get into it.
I think I've got a pretty simple rule when you go to these industry events. I've got two actually. One, if Bookie's speaking, don't bother. Two.
Jack.
No, I'm joking. Definitely go.
Terrible.
Definitely go and listen to Bookie.
I love how I will literally harass the hell out of you and everyone's like, yeah, get him, get him. And then you say one thing back to me and everyone's like...
I know, it's sickening.
It's a double standard.
Joking aside, the thing that I've learned from going to a few of these different types of events is that it's not very often that a panel talk will be that good, because people don't get long enough to actually get into their points. It's quite surface level. A keynote or a fireside chat, usually pretty good. And that's if you plan properly before you go and pick out the keynotes, the fireside chats, and kind of generally avoid the panels unless it's something really specific to what you want to see, you'll have a better time.
I would say that sometimes, certainly from agency, you realise that when you go to these things, because you're so immersed in a lot of these topics on a day-to-day basis, or you're exposed to so many kind of forward-thinking tools and tech and whatnot, that sometimes this stuff can feel a bit... Why are you laughing now?
We're waiting for you.
I was thinking which one of you I was going to call a forward-thinking tool.
Okay. because you're exposed to this stuff, when you go to these things, sometimes it doesn't feel as kind of wow factor. And that says a lot about agency life, because you're working at a million miles an hour and you're seeing these things every day. They don't necessarily feel as, again, woo, jazz hands. But having said that, I can't speak on the specific talks that this individual went to, but maybe they were just a bit, the rubbish ones.
Have you been, and this is just actually a question to this group now, what's the best ones that you guys have been to that you can remember? Like, who's held the best ones?
Yeah. I think there was one at Media 360, which featured someone called Buki,
No, I mean, like, well, what's the best event you've been to? So, like, you got to think. So, we got the Adwanted events, we got Adweek, we got Madfest, we got the campaign events. Like, whose ones have you guys enjoyed the most? If you've been to,
I was lucky enough to go to South by Southwest. last year. That was pretty good. Nice, but okay. It's not really open to like that many people. I just got really, really lucky. And even then, to be honest with you, I avoided most of the advertising talks. I went to like all the weird and wonderful stuff that was a bit sort of out there. So maybe talking to your point, Harriet, maybe it is about going and seeing stuff that you're less familiar with, because then it's more impressive to you.
I'm interested to hear from you on this one, Charlie, given that you're the other side of the coin. What do you think about industry events like this?
Yeah, I mean, we, to be honest, kind of the same sentiment. I feel that a lot of it is quite rehashed. I think some of it is, it's things that are kind of a bit patently obvious to someone who keeps their finger on the pulse. And that's not to say that, you know, that there aren't times that it's useful for people maybe who are coming in, who are trying to learn, who are, you know, if you're a junior, for instance, go to as many as you can. It's great. Meet as many people there. There's always, you know, something you can learn. But we, as Show Heroes, we put on our own event, funnily enough, called the Digital Distillery last year in the Hippodrome Casino. It was pretty cool. But that one was kind of the antithesis of what media events kind of end up being, and we tried to have interesting people on the panel, and thankfully succeeded. We had a bit more sort of interaction with the crowd. It was a bit smaller. It was only 100 sort of hand selected people, and it was in sort of response to the fact that actually we didn't see that much value in the wider sort of industry event world.
Yeah, when you say interaction with the crowd, all I can picture you doing is shaking up the bottles of champagne for Show Hero of the Month, spraying it. say Augie, you say Show Heroes.
Wow, but okay.
That's just reminded me. To be fair, last week I went to an MIQ event that was put on just for people who are indie agencies, called the Indie Circle, and they did a whole kind of morning of different talks and a bit of roundtable discussion about AI and like how it's kind of affecting independent agencies. And there was kind of actually some really good discussion about it. It's a much smaller, like, singular event rather than one of these kind of mega conference type things.
But do we not see, sorry to jump in there, do we not see how this is absolutely mirroring general culture? Like, absolutely, like, we have moved away from the broadcast, you need to get everyone needs to be in this, and we're seeing the value in these smaller, smaller events that are more targeted at the right people than doing a big one and inviting everybody. That's exactly what we're seeing. And I think we'll probably see a lot more of that. I think that I love me a bit of MIQ first and foremostly, so I love that they're putting that on. But I think we're going to see a bit more, you know, Show Hero is doing the same, getting the right people in the room. An engaged audience is better than a large audience, is what we're starting to see.
I agree with that, Pookie. I also still think that there's a need for events like Ab Week, and they will never not be valuable. But as you say, smaller events could potentially add value to individuals such as our writer.
Because to be honest, they don't have to do too much. Just change up the days a little bit. If you've got Ad Week for TV, Ad Week for digital, Ad Week, but in the same week, but you've just got a day, so we're not trying to get to, you know, they tend to split out the session, so you have to kind of come all day. I don't want to come all day week. So I think that's quite interesting.
Agreed.
I think
you
can have that idea
for
free.
No one's got the time.
One of the issues there, we're kind of almost saying like consolidate it a bit, but then one of the complaints in there was also that the lines were too long. So there's clearly the demand is there for it, but so how do you sort of change that? Because it's not like it's cheap to go, is it? Like,
no. Very good point. Mm. Nice.
Yeah.
So, well, there we go. No answer there, really. Yeah, no solution. Just do better.
Wait till you've got the Media Freak event, and then tell us about it.
Well, we'll be at Cannes this year. Hopefully, so any media owners out there that fancy taking us away, let us know.
We'll be at Cannes, but can someone please take us?
Anyway, that wraps up this week. Thanks so much for listening to the Media Freak podcast. If you like listening to our freak this week, remember to like, subscribe, and tell your friends. We'll be back in an exciting location right at the heart of the media scene later this month, so stay tuned. Media Anon will return next week, as well as Freak of the Week. Do keep your stories coming in. Huge thanks to Alchemy Network as our long-term commercial partner. See you later.
See ya.
Bye bye, driver.